Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, coming to you from outside. So if you hear barking or birds, that is why. And I'm joined once again by my co-hosts, Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. What is up, boys?
We are both very much inside.
Yeah, but what is up is the very unflattering angle that you have your computer.
DC
I am staring at the sky, but luckily it's just audio only for the listeners.
see, Colin, if you do that thing too where you press your tongue up against your teeth, then it makes it like an Instagram smile. So we're just trying to help you out with your angles, bro.
Anyways, in Manchester United news, things are looking up a bit more than they were the last time we spoke. A 4-0 win against Real Sociedad in the Europa League, followed by a 3-1 win against Newcastle United in the Premier League. And quality of the opponents aside, it is nice to see Manchester United scoring goals again, particularly Dan James getting in on the action as well.
There are so many noises.
Really, yeah, it's quite a bit.
Sorry.
Hey, Matt.
Hey.
Also, we're joined by Matt.
None of the noises are from you.
Okay. I was like, it's pretty quiet in here. I was like,
no, it is entirely Colin.
Well, I guess the best way for me and my brand to respond to Dr. Doolittle's initial position here is shout out to Daniel James, the spark plug of Manchester United that we didn't know we needed.
I knew that. That's
what did we not know that? Did we not know we needed him? I'm pretty sure like we knew like we need Daniel James to come in at certain points and do a job. And
100%. We always knew we needed.
It was just if he was going to do player.
Well, I'm sorry, Nathan. I missed that.
I said we've always known that we needed the concept of a right wing player, and we just never decided to do it. But
yeah, right. Like so, moving Dan James to the left has been odd. I know that's where he played his last season at Swansea, but the season before that, he played on the right. And he was at his best last year when playing on the right. So it's been really nice that not only have we been playing him on the right, where I think he's a much better player, but that he's actually scoring goals from the right now so that people can stop being like, oh, well, you know, he scores more goals from the left because he's more of a goal scorer from the left. He's more of a creator from the right. But it's nice to see the production coming and be useful from the right side. I'm sure he'll become Ollie's new temporary right wing solution.
Yeah, I may or may not have referred to him as the Welsh Sancho in the upcoming starting 11 that will be published on the busbybabe.com. But I apologize in advance for that comparison.
Yeah, I mean, part of that has been the stagnation of Daniel James, and a lot of the criticism of him, even in the first half against Newcastle, has been his sort of indecisiveness on the ball. But you know, the goal that he scored against Newcastle, which proved to be the decisive one, was him, you know, finally taking the initiative and getting in the dangerous position on the end of a cross and, you know, whacking it past the keeper instead of taking another two or three touches.
Yeah, I just think he got a bad rap because he was in a bad situation. He got run into the ground last season because he was never supposed to play as much as he did, and United didn't have any other options. So he had to play, and he was playing really well. And then when you finally were like, maybe we could try to get him rest, Marcus Rashford went down, and it was like, okay, we need you even more. And he just hit a wall, which we would have rode him out the rest of the season, even though he wasn't producing anymore because he was drained. He comes back from Project Restart. He gets 50 minutes in a game where he has no impact, and that was basically it. We didn't see him again until really the opening day of the season, where again that game against Crystal Palace, no one was good. But by then everybody hated him. It was, oh, get this guy, you know, get this guy out. He's crap. And he came back against Newcastle, where I thought he played really well. Did nothing against Chelsea. We didn't really see him again. He popped up against Istanbul to score a goal. He popped up in some League Cup matches maybe here and there. Then, you know, he played very well against Leeds, played okay against Leicester, not great, and then disappeared again and, you know, wasn't great against Watford, was okay. So, you know, he never really got back to the heights. So now it's nice to see him now getting back to where he was last year, where he's making an impact in the game besides just the hard work and the running, because he protects Juan Bisaccia better than any other player that we put on the right. And we're just defensively in that regard, he brings so much to the team. But yeah, if you're not producing anything, we can't play you. So it's nice to see him now chiming in when his numbers getting called.
When we saw him last year, he got the other side of the young player problem, where it's like, hey, you know, we got this new guy, the best way for them to get experience and learn is to play. Whereas Daniel James got overplayed. And so to a certain degree, he got exposed because he was playing too much. He was probably, you know, dead ass tired. And then on top of that, because he's playing so much, everybody's just watching him so much. And they're developing their opinions on it. Whereas this year, again, not to continue plugging my starting 11 piece I just wrote, but he was quoted today in his press conference with Ollie in the lead up to the Real Sociedad second leg, saying that this year's given him the opportunity to kind of sit back and watch a little bit and really see what the expectations are from Ollie as far as how he wants play to happen on the right wing. And it's given him a chance in training to kind of sit there and like grind things out and work on the cerebral part of his game. So we've always known that Daniel James had a high motor. It's always been very, very apparent. And I think where he's most effective, like Pauly said, is in a way he can almost be like a secondary right back on the right side with Juan Bisaccia, because if Juan Bisaccia pushes up too high, Dan James can all of a sudden, on the turn of a dime, just like turn the burners on and go catch up to somebody. So they complement each other really well in that nice way. So it's like, I think to a certain degree, Daniel James was just kind of waiting for his opportunity to get back in favor and take a shot. And so he's looked really good in the last couple games. It's one of those things where it's like, ride the high while we can. Is it a flash in the pan? We're going to find out, because he's earned more playing time. So we're going to find out probably in the next couple weeks, what he's going to offer for the whole season. But it's certainly encouraging seeing him play well the last couple games, because we know that you've got the Europa League, you've got the FA Cup, you still got the Premier League. We need to secure top four and potentially try and bring in at least two trophies. So if he's going to play well for the next six, 5 months, good on him. We'll take it.
And, worth mentioning too that, this has been a problem position for us for years now, and especially this season, the lack of creativity on that side has really shown as the goals have dried up on the front end. And these two games are another example of when Bruno and Rashford are firing is really when we're at our best. But I think what was a little bit different in both of these cases was the ball spread across the field a little bit more, despite, even the limitations that Anthony Martial brought in, continuing his probably the worst form of his Manchester United career.
I don't know if I'd say it's been a problem for United in recent years, because it has to exist for it to be a problem. And United just straight up haven't had a right winger or brought in a right winger in so many years that it's just a black hole, that the problem is so severe. Like, this whole season has been Ollie trying to paper over the giant crack that is right back. And it started with, he leans heavily on Mason Greenwood to do that. And Mason Greenwood's not a right winger. And he's moved Rashford over there. He's played Juan Mata there for a month. The whole season has just been Ollie basically being like, we almost have this figured out, but we have this mega black hole here. And if teams don't have to worry about the right side, then they could focus on Bruno and Rashford in the middle and the left. So we need some sort of threat there. And it's just been about trying to find it and make everything quick, because it's a black hole.
Sorry, I was waiting for a dog to stop barking before I unmuted myself.
I was wondering when that silence was like going to.
Kind of moving things to. Yes, Nathan.
Sorry. I was gonna make a dumb joke before you actually started hosting again. I'm sorry.
Make you're like Matt joke.
Damon in that movie. It's like we bought a zoo.
Well, you might as continue. Well make it now.
Yeah, we bought a zoo, Matt Damon. You remember that movie?
No, because I didn't see it. Because why would I?
I think Kevin James also had a movie called The Zookeeper, but I digress.
Yes, he did.
Zookeeper 2, Zookeepier. Yeah.
Oh, God, dude, was there a Paul second Bart, one of those? Please tell me there wasn't a second.
No, that was a bad joke. Oh. That was me making a dumb joke. Anyways, moving the topic to a little bit more big picture things at Manchester United. What do we think about this? These two games, I guess, in terms of Ollie's ability to help turn things around? Because it seems, again, that rather than slumping into a long, you know, depressing run of bad games, the squad is able to kind of pull itself out of it, you know, without maybe not without too much trouble, but it seems like they're a lot more motivated to do so now than we have seen from Manchester United teams in the past.
I don't know if I use these last two games to really make any sweeping statements.
As I mentioned earlier, you know, quality of the opponent.
Yeah, that's the big thing, is quality of the opponent. We won a Europa League game. Like, I saw us be terrible for a whole half a season in the Premier League last year, and every Thursday we went out to Europe, and that, you know, other than the one time where like Rashford was basically injured and we started Dan James as our center forward against Alkmaar away, like, we never struggled against those teams. And we played Colchester in the League Cup, we didn't struggle. We played Tranmere in the League Cup, we didn't struggle. We played Derby County in the FA Cup, we didn't struggle. But then we'd come back to the league and play real teams, even the bottom of the barrel ones, but real teams, and we struggled. Now, I understand Sociedad are a good team in La Liga, but the quality of La Liga is worse than the Premier League.
Yeah, look at what happened at the Nou Camp last week.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, you have Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, who all three of them are way lower than they were 3 or 4 years ago. But then the rest of La Liga, that is not great quality. And Real Sociedad have not been good since the Europa League draw was made. That... It's just like that 9-0 win against Southampton. It was, okay, is this something? I don't know. It's one game, and we got to see, like, let's not go crazy because of one game. And guess what? It took us, what, three more games after that Southampton match to get another win in the league? So it was good that they took care of business, but, like, you've got Chelsea coming up now. The problems were on full display again is when you take Paul Pogba out of the team and you have nothing in midfield. You bring in Fred and Matic, you've got exactly what you should expect from Fred and Matic. Solid defensively, still nothing going forward. Too much pressure being put on the front four to do it themselves, on Bruno to do it himself. This time they came through. You know, against West Ham, they struggled and it took an extra 30 minutes. It's hard to see... Oh, you know, I think the Reds are back on track and they're going to go marching on right now.
Well, and let's not forget either, we did struggle against Astana and AZ Alkmaar at 1.2 in the Europa League last year. Those were both pretty tough.
Well, I said Alkmaar. Astana, we beat them 1-0 and they were never coming close to winning. no, God, that wasn't
Astana.
You know
when Lee Grant was in goal?
Oh,
that
it wasn't
was fun.
Astana.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Astana on Thanksgiving Day. What a game
that
was.
Yeah, but that's not... That was the U23s plus Luke Shaw.
And Captain Jesse Lingard.
Yes.
My thick king out here thriving in Kazakhstan.
He actually was terrible that game.
He was. I mean, not a lot happened that was good in that game. I think I'm going to probably just go ahead and echo Polly's point, though, as far as, like, the last two games are concerned. Because it wasn't that long ago we lost to Sheffield. You know, it's like we just don't take care of business when we need to. And so I'm kind of actually looking towards tomorrow's match, Thursday's match, depending on whenever this gets posted. Real Sociedad second leg. There we go. we're up 4-0 on aggregate. So obviously Sociedad's chasing us right now, hopefully trying to pull off some kind of miracle. Right now, United are unbeaten in their last 14 Europa League games at Old Trafford since 2012. And it's one of those things like, are we going to keep that streak alive tomorrow? You know, are we going to rest on our 4-0 laurels, or are we going to still go and, you know, just beat them or at least tie them, making sure that they are never inside the in the game, and we just take care of business? Because obviously everybody's heads are going to be turned towards Sunday's match against Chelsea. So it's like, this is an opportunity for, I think, Ollie to reprove to people, you know, he's got his team's focus for the game at hand, not the game that's coming up. And I think that's as important. You know, if we handily just go ahead and take care of business these first, you know, in both legs, I'd feel a lot more encouraged than by the 4-0 result, because then we went and won in the second leg, you know, 2-1 or something, 2-0, whatever suggests that United took care of business. Because, you know, we came off of that 4-0 win. Yeah, we beat Newcastle 3-1, but at one point it was tied 1-1, and Newcastle at certain points looked like they were the more threatening team. And so there's still, you still see these inconsistencies. Every time United seems to have like this really, really high mountaintop, we find ourselves going back towards a valley. So I'd like to see some consistency. That would make me feel a lot better about the last two results, especially going into the Chelsea match this weekend.
Yeah, and to Nathan's point, that's why I think we're going to see a stronger team than you would expect against Sociedad. Because, Solskjaer said on Sunday, Ahmad was not going to start. He said today, or Wednesday, he said Choueiri and Ahmad will be in the squad, but I can't tell you if they're going to start, which I think raises the chances of them starting from nothing to doubtful.
I think he said Teehee after that, too.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see it happening. Maybe Ahmad, definitely not Choueiri. Maybe Ahmad,
is this
probably
is
not.
This so you jinx it and so that he does start?
No, I don't see him starting anyway. I always said it's going to be two or three games off the bench before he gets his start. I mean, this is a guy who has played 29 minutes of first-team senior football this year for both Atalanta and United. And here's the thing, like, if he goes out there and tears it up, if he starts, goes out there and tears it up, he hasn't played enough to be able to be fit again for Sunday. And if he's that good and Solskjaer's like, oh, now he's not available to play Chelsea. So if he plays for a half hour and he tears it up, Solskjaer could be like, maybe I could bring him on for 20 minutes against Chelsea. I just don't see him coming on. He wants to keep the pressure off of them, but more importantly is he does want to win this game.
Which is why I think he kind of also delayed him coming into the team, is I think he like the hype around him was so high. Like people just saying him being messy, like, I think kind of put the pressure on the kid, and I think it was smart of Ollie to kind of like made sure he played. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but like that was the word around the news outlets when he came in.
For sure. Yeah, you also saw him limit where he was last Thursday. Is he didn't, you know, United had this game in hand wrapped up, what, 60 minutes in. He didn't bring him on for a half hour. Because, you know, you've got this 19-year-old kid coming on, and Sociedad can be dangerous. You don't want to risk yourself defensively, because especially with our defense, things happen, a ball bounces one way or the other, or suddenly it becomes 3-1 with 25 minutes to go. Now the tie's back open. And maybe if God forbid, it becomes 3-2, it's wide open now. So I think that's going to factor into your decision here on Thursday. Not so much that the tie might be back open. Like, you can play, you just don't lose 4-0 11 and not lose 4, you know, lose 2-0. But I don't think he wants to lose 2-0. I think he wants to – I know the name of the game is – go to the next round. And frankly, like, if we, you know, even if we won 4-3, you know, if we lose 3-0 and we go to the next round, that's fine. But he wants to win this game. He doesn't want to, you know, go in. He wants the momentum. He doesn't want to go in on the, oh yeah, like we won one game and then backed our way into the next. So he wants to, he's going to play a stronger team, I believe, and basically go out there and say, hey, let's go out there and be winning this game. And if we are, even if it's just 1-0, 2-0, then 60 minutes, 5 subs, you'll see a lot of play. So like, I think Ahmad will play 20, 25 minutes. But I think he's going to send the message to his team, we're not backing into the next round. We want to go and win this game to get to the next round.
Yeah.
Nathan, you are muted.
Whoops. Speaking of momentum, Real Sociedad as well is coming off of their own 4-0 win over the weekend. I mean, it was against Deportivo Alaves, but still, you know, if we're going to draw momentum off of a 4-0 win over Real Sociedad, then I'm sure their coach can do the same thing for them, especially with one of their forwards scoring 3 goals in that match. And then Porto, who I'm sure everybody's familiar with, if you play FIFA, you've definitely packed them 600 times in gold packs. He scored as well. And I mean, there's quality players on Real Sociedad's team. Like I don't think we can forget that they're not performing particularly well. And La Liga is kind of a weird division to base them off of, but like they're not bad either. This is still a game that we have to take seriously. I don't think.
Yeah.
They might not necessarily pull a Barcelona against PSG, but I think Ali is very much the game in front of me. You know, he's like Bill Belichick, we're on to Cincinnati. He's not worried about anything else right now. He's worried about tomorrow, so for Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, their quality was evident in the way that they played us. I mean, in the first half, they created quite a few chances, and they, you know, made us nervous a couple times, I guess. Not me.
My God.
I don't care about the Europa League, but
if their back line just decided, you know what, maybe we can't trap these forwards who are like insanely fast, and they just played a little bit further back, maybe it's a different game.
Yeah. You know, not give us acres of space to counterattack. Also, David Silva, overrated player. I'm going to go ahead and make that point. It's not that
he's better washed. When he was bald? Ever since he grew his hair out, he's been worse?
Probably. But he was also uglier when he was bald. So.
What's more important? Look good, play good? Not for David Silva?
Yeah.
He looks like the guy you don't want to talk to in the scary movie, but you gotta because he's got a certain thing you need, you know? When he was bald.
Oh, like the guy from Resident.
Yeah, you need him to complete the quest, man.
All right,
so anyway, sorry.
looking ahead to Chelsea a little bit this weekend, what are our confidence levels at going into this one with Tuchel at the helm? They've been playing a lot more possessive attacking play, trying to control the game, which could potentially leave room for us to counterattack, which we like to do. But they've also been pretty good at closing up space for other teams moving forward quickly. And, you know, I don't think Atletico Madrid would be a precedent for what to expect against us. But I still see Chelsea as, a decent defensive team that might shut us down a bit more than maybe people would expect, just because they knew that we would be counterattacking in that game.
Well, that's the thing we were banking on when we played Chelsea the first time, when their own PE teacher was still their coach. We were like, Chelsea's defense isn't good. They don't scare me, you know? And so sure enough, that was an incredibly boring game to watch. Whereas Chelsea right now under Tuchel, they are not conceding goals, which is a little bit more concerning, I think. It's going to be one of those games where our defense is really going to have to be on their P's and Q's, and you can't have Harry Maguire with half clearances that fall on the volley of Alan St. Maximin. You can't have Victor Lindelof just getting bullied to the ground by a much lesser forward. I mean, it's going to have to be like a full team effort, I think. And it's going to probably have that possibility where it's one of those classic United-Chelsea games where we all get hyped up for it, and then it's like the worst game of soccer you've ever watched.
Yeah, no, that, you've hit the nail on the head there. That's what my fear. I think we're just going to be in for another 0-0. I mean, think about it. Like, if McTominay's back, you're getting McTominay and Fred in midfield. If he's not back, you're getting Fred and Matic. So you're already losing something on offense or for the attack. Chelsea are a possession side. So at the very, it won't be as, you know, they won't be as conservative as they were under Frank when they came to Old Trafford. But we just saw Atletico sit back and try to play him on the counter. What did Chelsea do? They're really good at preventing counters. So you're facing a possession side that's still figuring out the kinks to their system. So there's a lot of they're pretty stale right now. There's still a lot of Van Gaal in them that they're stale. They use a lot of their defensive players and not enough of their attackers to be fun yet. So, you know, if Timo Werner has a moment of magic or something, then yeah, they could snag a goal. But they will snuff out United's counters. They're very good at doing that, which means it's going to be very hard for them, for United, to get anything going. I feel like for United, this is like a 0-0 at best.
Man, I hate to kind of agree. I wish it would be exciting, but every game that I wanted to be exciting when we play against somebody that's in the top six, it's just like, okay. It's just boring usually. Like, I don't know.
But like, Matt's right.
The issue
beforehand was it seemed like we were playing that way intentionally. Like we could have been better because we could have just, you know, played our good players and actually tried to play on the front foot. This is more of a case of like, oh, well, you know, we don't really have a choice in how we're going to line up here because our, you know, our good players are either off form or not fit. And it's just going to be what it is. You know, I guess maybe at best you get the game that you got against Chelsea last year, which is where it was very.
Or they're told to soak up the pressure and hit them on the break.
Right. But
even if you have the right guys in, you know.
Right. At best, you know, last year against Chelsea when we went to Stamford Bridge and didn't really create much. Both teams didn't create much other than a couple of half chances here and there. And we put one in before halftime. We scored from a set piece in the second half. Or even the League Cup match where we didn't create much, but we won a penalty and then Rashford hit one from 45 yards out.
God.
You know, like, it's going to be a moment of magic. Like, do we have that? And so far this season, when we've had these games, Chelsea, you know, Mendy makes that save against Rashford. Arsenal, Greenwood missed that chance at the very beginning of the game. City, we didn't really do much. Liverpool, Bruno and Pogba don't score. Arsenal, Cavani gets two chances, doesn't score. We got to put those. We got to, if we get one or two chances, we have to put them away. Otherwise.
I mean, something that would make me feel better, too, is I know Cavani's already ruled out for the Sociedad game, but if it's a precautionary measure for him being there on Sunday, too, maybe that just provides a different look. But, I mean, Chelsea's not – I know they just beat Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, but they're not exactly coming off the most inspiring draw in their last Premier League game either. I mean, on Saturday, they drew 1-1 to Southampton. And it was Minamino who scored first for Southampton before Mason Mount, you know, scored a penalty to save a point, which I'm sure nobody can draw any kind of allusions to Manchester United for that. But that was a game that Chelsea had 71% possession, 9 shots, 3 on target, and Southampton scored with their only shot on target. So
yeah, so they were efficient. I mean, look, that's the thing. Is Chelsea just hold the ball to death and they possess you. They possess you to death, and that's basically their defense, is they don't give you the ball, but it's very stale. So like their attack. I think this is not the best time to be facing Chelsea because we have got injuries. But I'm also, I think it's better to face Chelsea now than it would be to face Chelsea in 2 months.
Yeah, I think. If Cavani is fit, I'm a lot more optimistic about our chances to score. But, I mean, do we think that we're at the point now where Mason Greenwood should start at forward over Anthony Martial? I mean, just based off of his performance against Newcastle, it took him, what, maybe 50 minutes just to get involved.
Yes, because Mason Greenwood deserves to play, and so does Dan James.
Yeah. Hard to argue with that.
Love it.
All right, go Colin. Rio.
host.
All right, before we wrap things up here, we're going to do quick predictions.
Yeah? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, I'm going to go 3-0 win for Chelsea, since I'm always wrong.
Jesus Christ.
Especially if Giroud plays. I think I'm very scared of Giroud right now.
Boy, you think Giroud might take advantage of Lindelof and Maguire a little bit?
Giroud has a good record against us, but I'm tired of fans always being, oh, name Chelsea striker against Lindelof or against our defense. You know, Chelsea had scored like 10 goals in their last three games coming into the game in Old Trafford, and everybody's like, Lindelof and Maguire against Havertz and Werner, and they were scared shitless, and it's clean sheet. And for all that Chelsea did last year, what, they scored one, you know, they beat us in the FA Cup, but in the league, they didn't score against us.
I'm not scared of Werner and Havertz. I'm scared of Olivier Giroud.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a good record against us, but again, like, people always love to find the I think we'll be fine there. Bear in mind that Giroud plays on the right of the front two because he likes to play that front two because that's where Werner's best and Werner's off on the left. So Giroud will more often than not be going up against Harry Maguire.
I don't want to make a prediction, man. Like,
I'm not making one either. I already said we're looking at nil-nil, so.
I can't gauge Chelsea, you know, because, like, their lineup against Southampton, their starting 11, Tammy Abraham, Timo Werner, Mason Mount, Marcus Alonso, Kovacic, Kante, Reece James, Rudiger, Zuma, Azpilicueta. Like, there's not anybody on that team that, like, strikes fear into me. I feel like we match up really well against, if you just did, like, an individual X's and O's, like, this player matches up with this player. I feel like we cancel a lot of what they do out, but it's one of those things where if they're catching us out of possession because we're doing something funny, trying to do something on the counterattack, and they can punish us, then it's just going to be a really, really frustrating game to watch. I don't know. I think it'll probably be 1-1, if I'm being honest. But I'm not looking forward to watching this game.
I am desperate for an energizing ass kicking. Like, I really want us to just go out and destroy a team that is supposed to not be destroyed by us. And looking at the rest of our schedule, I'm not really sure when, if ever, that's going to happen.
When Paul Pogba comes back with fresh legs to run it, tired legs.
Yeah. That does sound exciting. Maybe Liverpool in May 1st, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to say a tie. Like, I draw. I don't know if it's just going to be 0-0 or 1-1 or 2-2 or it's just this kind of game just has draw written all over. Written all over it. Sorry. I couldn't get it out. But I don't know. It could be. It is a Premier League and every once in a while, I mean, we come out and we play really, really well. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if – I think it really depends on – I mean, you guys have said it, but Maguire and Lindelof, I think. I'm never worried about our forwards. Midfield, I'm sometimes worried about. And then defense, I'm always worried about. So it's just in levels. So But yeah, no, I also agree with Nathan that I think we match up with them, but it also depends on what we do. So,
hey, more important than this Chelsea game, who do you think are the other three teams that Mino Raiola was thinking of when he said only four English clubs could afford Haaland over the week?
Chelsea, City.
That's where it gets interesting. Yeah, right. Because Tottenham doesn't like to spend money.
Arsenal can't afford him. Liverpool can't afford him.
Liverpool's looking actually kind of strapped right now for some.
They're very strapped. I mean,
they're going to be selling off some players this year.
Well, if anyone wants to buy them,
there's very few. There's very few teams that can afford Erling Haaland to begin with. And I came across this 2 days ago, a piece by Miguel Delaney about talking about City, and he said one of the reasons that PSG spent so much money on Neymar is because they knew that would inflate the market. And by inflating the market, they were like, there's only a handful of teams that'll be able to stay near us. And they're like, and it was basically like a few of the English teams. It was basically like a few of the English teams. And it pointed out how Real Madrid and Barcelona were not among those teams. They're like, they won't be able to compete with us because it didn't. Five years ago, if you looked at the books of Real Madrid and Barcelona, you would have seen to be like, whoa, this is unsustainable, especially with all the new laws that La Liga and Spain have put in place. Like, Barcelona are almost bankrupt. Real Madrid aren't in the big financial driver's seat that they used to be. It's very interesting, like, that they keep talking up Mbappe and or Haaland. And it's like, they probably don't have enough money for either of them.
No, I don't think they do.
This tweet that was shared yesterday. The top five most expensive transfers in La Liga history. Number one is Philippe Coutinho. Then Joao Felix. Antoine Griezmann to Barcelona. Ousmane Dembele. And then Eden Hazard. Which, I'm going to go ahead and say that all five of these are fat flops right now.
Yeah.
And I think all five of those occurred after Neymar too.
Yep.
From what I understand, Joao Felix is doing okay at Atletico. I mean, he's a young kid.
Yeah, but, I mean, 126 million euros.
I'd also like to give him some slack because he got put into Diego Simeone's system.
And those are all post-Neymar transfers, and they've all kind of been bust
for us.
And they've all, you know, kind of learned your lesson, is all those teams are struggling financially now because you wasted so much money on crap players.
Well, you knew two of them were after Neymar because Coutinho and Dembele were bought with the Neymar money.
Right, which is exactly, like, that was PSG's plan coming to fruition, was we gave Barcelona all this money. They want to go out and replace it. So they look for Dembele, Coutinho, and Dortmund and Liverpool basically said, you got all that money. We want some of it. And that trickled down to Liverpool sold Coutinho, and Southampton said, you've got all that Coutinho money. Now you want Van Dijk? We want some of that money. And then that trickled down to, okay, Leicester's got this center back with 4 years left on his contract. And they go, we don't want to sell him. But if you make him the record signing, we'll sell him. And suddenly that record was now 75 million. You got to go to 80 million. And so it's exactly what PSG, the brilliance behind that is so good from PSG to just inflate the market and then no one can compete. It's not that we could spend more. It's just that everybody costs more.
Sucks.
Not to bring in some more controversy into the conversation. What are the chances you think that Ed Woodward offers up Anthony Martial as part of some kind of sweet-in-the-pot deal for whichever player we target from BVB this year?
I mean, the Glazers intervened once already on behalf of
They're
Martial.
They're not going to sell Anthony Martial.
And, at this point, I'm not really sure how that.
But also, if I'm Borussia Dortmund, I would. That's the thing about Martial, is if you're Borussia Dortmund, you just sit there and be like, well, why would I? You know, I'd rather money. I wouldn't rather this 25-year-old who has a 20-goal season under his belt, and that's all he's got. He was good when he got to United, then he was bad. Then he had a good half season, then he was bad. And then he had a great year, and then he was bad. So why would I? You know, give me money. I'd rather take that money and I'd rather invest it in somebody who's younger who could be better than Martial.
So Anthony Martial to Inter Milan confirmed. Cool.
Yeah, 5 years though.
That kind of feels like where he might go, doesn't it?
Yeah, in 5 years. Nobody's offering up a substantial fee for Anthony Martial.
No.
And. Yep. The United aren't going to sell him for not a fee. To them, he's 25. Oh, you know, he'll rebound and he'll get better. But, like, we're not going to sell him for peanuts.
I do think maybe you're onto something, though, with the idea of player swapping, because it seems like the market might be trending towards that.
The market's trending towards that, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, though, because...
Well, with a club like Dortmund, we don't really have a lot of assets we can player swap with them.
Phil Jones.
See, that's exactly why player swaps won't happen, because everybody always offers up the players they want to get rid of.
I mean, look at Dortmund's center back pool right now and tell me Phil Jones doesn't walk into that room.
He's hurt.
But
crawl into that room.
Look, I don't want to make the comparison to American sports like we too often do, but look at American sports. When was the last time you saw a bona fide star for star trade? You don't see those anymore because teams when you're, you know, at the trade deadline, when you're just trying to add that asset for a playoff run, you're not, you don't want to give up one of your assets. So you,
you mean
give
Russell
up...
Westbrook for John Wall wasn't a star for star?
Kevin Zeitler for Odell Beckham Jr.
I mean, Russell Westbrook, and they're old.
Colin, stuff it. Colin, stuff it.
But there's a reason why you see so many trades for, especially in baseball and in hockey, where it's just, we trade you this, we get one top level, you know, guy who's ready to play at the high, at the, in the major leagues back. And then we get two prospects and we get a bunch of draft picks. That's what you trade. And in football, it's the same thing, except instead of prospects and draft picks, you're just getting money. But everybody wants, oh, let's just get rid of the players we don't want. Yeah, well, like, if I'm selling Jadon Sancho, why would I take the players you don't want? Like, I'd rather get somebody in return. And who would I ask for in return? I'd ask for Marcus Rashford. And then suddenly it's, well, we're not giving him up. Like, so it's you know, or you ask for a player at a different position, but that just creates a different hole in your squad. I don't think – everybody always suggests swap deals will come up because money isn't there, but, like, teams just can't agree on who they want – you know, teams don't want to give up the players that are good, and the other team doesn't want to take a player who's not good.
Well, and I think another issue we're going to run into as well is, like, even our mid-tier players are on too big a contract.
Right, they won't leave.
So it's like for Dortmund, especially for a club like Dortmund, if we're trying to get Jadon Sancho or Haaland from underneath their thumb, it's going to be like, you know, Dortmund's going to be asking about who our most exciting academy player is or our most exciting youth player who hasn't gotten re-signed because they scored three goals for the senior team yet. And I just, I do wonder what some of that looks like because obviously the market is going to still be in flux, even with the potential of people starting to return to the stands at the end of the season in May. Like, I mean, we're still waiting a while, I think, before vaccine rates are to a certain level where governments feel comfortable letting everybody back in. And then, you know, you got to then course correct.
Yeah, Nathan's right. Like, players just won't leave. Remember back to the David De Gea situation. What was the big holdup in that deal was after they couldn't agree on a fee, it became money and Keylor Navas for David De Gea, which we were like, eventually said, yeah, sure, we'll do that. Because that would have been a fair deal. Give us money plus Keylor Navas. He's good. He's a great goalkeeper. He's not David De Gea, but he's very, very good. He'd be one of the best in the league. We'll take that deal. And what held it up was Keylor Navas said no. And Keylor Navas didn't want to leave Real Madrid. And they had to go and convince him and beg him to accept that deal. And then the fax machine happened. But for a few days, that deal was off because Keylor Navas was just like, no, I'm not leaving.
Are you saying that Madrid is nicer than Manchester?
Yes. Maybe not the fans, but certainly the weather and the food.
There we go. I just had to get Paulie back into his original sweet spot of trashing English food. I just want to know how much brown sauce they have in Spain, because that's slept on.
Anyway, I think I'm going to wrap this podcast up here. So
the talk of brown sauce is where you want to finish?
Yeah. We'll include our brown sauce debate for the Patreon backers, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, nice Irish breakfast, though. It's different.
This is the part where we play our jingle, huh?
I've been Colin. Thanks for listening.
I'll be the same.